A big good morning or a big g'day to Morris Misalowski, who is our Mr. Tech. How are you, Morris?
Very good, thanks, and g'day to you.
Yeah. Now, Morris, now you've got to tell us about this thing, Zappos.com. It sounds Greek, but I've never heard of it before.
And it's not, but Zappos, which is Zappos.com, is an American-based online retailer. Been around for about 8 or 9 years now. It's one of those wonderful stories where he started in his garage, outgrew the house, and then became this monolith that he is now. Having said that, before he sold a previous company to Microsoft for about $28 million before he went back to his garage. So there's that little precursor.
So he sold his company.
He sold a previous company.
A previous company to Microsoft. What was the previous company?
I don't remember. It was obviously some tech company. It was something he started when he was young, and it was one of those play things that just grew, and he decided that he'd sell it, get rid of it, and then didn't have what else to do and looked around and thought of this.
What Microsoft did with it?
Don't know. I can go back and have a look. No. But what Zappos was a really ingenious idea. He thought, you know, he looked online and said, what is it that people are not buying online that they will? And he came up with this idea of selling shoes online. Who would have thought? I mean, most people want to try them on and see them. So he came up with this concept of a 365-day return policy. So if you bought the shoes from him, didn't like them, you had a whole year to return them to him. They had a complete online catalogue that is really schmick. I mean, it looks wonderful online where you can see it. You obviously can't try it on and feel it, but you can see all the shoes. And he sold and sold and sold. He has become what I consider to be one of the best representations of an online retailer that I've ever seen. He has a great company philosophy. His people are treated truly, truly like part of the family. If you go to YouTube and type in Zappos, you'll see that 9-minute piece that's been done by CBS on them. And he's built this culture of a way to do business online that hasn't been heard of before. He has a distribution company that he's set up out of it. All of his staff are trained for 6 weeks, and they're trained in every aspect of it. They have all the wonderful things that we would want out of an online retailer.
But not having to deal with feet.
Now, what's happened with him is he's grown and grown this thing to the point where, in America especially, he's just become well known. And Amazon decided they were a bit worried about what he was going to do in this space because he'd moved from shoes into clothing into other forms of retail. So Amazon...
That's what Amazon does right now. I mean, it started with books, but they've gone on to sell a whole lot of other stuff.
So they've kind of gone at opposite ends, and they're meeting in the middle is what's happening now. So Amazon decided, look, we better join. And they've made him a deal that he can't refuse. They've given him $890 million, it just depends which figure you look at, but somewhere at $890 million American dollars for him to join. And he's taken it all in stock rather than dollars. So it's one of these really sweet deals he claims for him. Zappos will stand alone for now. Amazon will learn from them as they need to do, and they'll share distribution between them.
But it's not like the iTunes store, for example, where you can see why people buy songs online because you don't need to get a hard version of the songs, and it's just the way of doing it. But to buy shoes, it's shoes are shoes, and you know, what's the advantage in buying it online to going into a shoe shop and actually seeing if it looks good?
The advantage is this: that he has hundreds of thousands of pairs of shoes. He says, if you want a pair of shoes, I stock it. And in his warehouse, he actually has all of these shoes available. Ships them within 24 hours. They land on your door within a couple of days. So you can buy any pair of shoes you want from anywhere in the world, apparently, and have it at your door when you want it. Prices are very good. Customer service is incredible. Online website. I sound like I'm a rep for it. I wish I had shares. Online. The online presence is good. You know, he's done really interesting things. If we take social networking, he's now put on an app a couple of months ago where people that are buying the shoe online are now represented on a map. So you can go on a map of America and not see the person's name, but see what they bought, when they bought it. So what's happened is you've seen these people buying shoes. All of a sudden, more people are buying shoes, and now he's selling more of that shoe because a lot of people are wondering, well, why did they buy that shoe? I have to get into it. So he's done really clever things along the way to build the business really
well. But
what
about postage? If you don't want the shoes, you've got to pay the postage and send it back?
No, send it back. Total refund. Very clever.
Wow, that is amazing. I mean, I guess that is the one thing that stops me from buying something online. It's the fact that even though they have a return policy, I still have to pay the postage, which could be $20.
365 days you've got, send it back to me, I'll send you back a cheque or obviously a credit.
Well, that makes it okay then, doesn't it?
And that's why he's been so successful. So good on him. It's a good example.
I've just read a headline that Amazon might be worried about some antitrust things around. Do you know anything about that?
I don't.
And that was the reason why they bought this.
I actually, there's a backstory to it apparently that's going around the blogs that that no one wants to confirm either, and that is that Zappos, the guy that owns it, Tony Hai, is really, I mean, he's happy to have done the deal, but it was a deal that was done because it had to be done. Some of his backers were a bit edgy about money in these times, and they've said, look, we need some cash back. So I don't know, but there seems to be a lot of backstory to it. I was surprised to tell you that when I read the story yesterday, because it happened yesterday, that he'd done the deal, because he last year he turned over $1 billion gross.
So, yes, but he's taken stock. So he's very clever. He's taken stock. He's not just, it's no gamble.
But he turned over $1 billion himself last year, and he had $625 in net revenue. So it wasn't like the guy was hungry. I mean, they were ahead. They were in the black and doing well.
And how much money does a person need in this life?
Well, I think he's got enough to keep him busy for a while.
As
anyway.
Bill Gates found, you know.
Yeah. He'll have got a bigger garage.
Yeah. Yes, hopefully he'll use it for niceness as well.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Now, the Britain National Gallery's offered art.
Another one that I like. This is an iPhone application, so you can download this. I think it's got a small clip, you know, a small monetary attached to it. But what you can do is you can take a tour of Britain's National Gallery right from your iPhone. So there's about 250 artworks, including the Monets and the Rembrandts and all the things you'd expect to see there. And you can zoom in really, really tight, so you can actually see the pixels on it. You can come out and see it further away.
So you can look at a bit of Mona Lisa's mouth.
If that's what you want to do. So, I mean, I studied art back at university as one of my subjects, so it would allow me to really get a very good look at it. So I can see it obviously from a distance, but I can really get very close. So the resolution's supposed to be very good on it. You can also take a guided tour. There's apparently 12 hours of audio attached to this as well. So you can either do one of the 12 tours, which are thematic. So you can choose which theme you want to take the tour on and go through that, or you can do a random tour. It's got information attached to it. It's got experts talking about it. So it's a really nice
app. If you're actually over there, you could use the tour.
You absolutely could, but if you're over here or anywhere else in Asia, you could look at it on your iPhone.
So it takes about an entire day just to go through that gallery anyway, isn't it? It's so huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a beautiful gallery. So you could certainly do that from anywhere in the world. So I think that's a nice way to while away a couple of hours if you're so inclined.
Well.
If you've got an iPhone.
If you've got an iPhone.
Yeah. Windows 7.
Oh, Microsoft. They're kind of walking away from Vista as quick as they can.
Well, there were a few little problems. I mean, just here at work, you know. I mean, it was like, which version of Vista do you have? Which one of this do you have? Do you have, you know, oh dear, you know. So, but this new system is apparently pretty good, isn't it?
It's been tested, they claim, by 1 million users in beta. And the response apparently is very good. And I must say, looking around the blogs and, you know, all that Ethernet space, there doesn't seem to be much downside yet. You know, there's been the odd critic and whatever, but not as much as there normally is. So Microsoft says they're happy, it's finished cooking, and we're likely to see it sometime towards the end of this year, early next year, in main distribution. And we'll all then forget about Vista and say, Vista who, is what they're all hoping.
It's amazing they could get it wrong, couldn't they?
No, but not really. it's Microsoft, so close your ears if you're listening, Microsoft. I love you to death, but you know they have a habit often of getting out into the marketplace quickly, and the notion of having to patch something is always unusual for me, that you put a product out, people buy, and then you release all these patches on top of it. You just couldn't do that in the normal world. But they're getting better. To their credit, Microsoft is getting better, and they are more responsive.
Now, we talked about cloud computing, I think, at one point.
We did a while ago.
Yeah. So do you want to just revise that?
In a nutshell, what cloud computing does is really push stuff up into the ether. For a long time now, if we wanted to own a software product, we had to go out and we had to buy it, we had to install it, and it was ours, and the updates really were up to us if we wanted to buy more or not. What we're seeing now online through things like Google Docs and Gmail and lots of other products is we don't need to own software. Somebody else does that, and we can just go online and use it. So there is a vast growing trend towards this, and that's euphemistically called cloud computing. Somebody else has the software. You're really just renting space, sometimes free, sometimes for a little bit of money.
Well, Google is free, isn't it?
Google is free, that's right. But then there are other products around where it is in the cloud, but you're paying a little bit. So what's happened here is this comment, and it's, again, very, very recent, is that they've been thinking about what the tech jobs are for the next 10 years or so. And the notion is that cloud computing will eventually become mainstream. It's most probably 5 to 10 years away before we all begin to adopt it and are happy with it. At this stage, very few of us are going to send our financial details up to some third party we don't know, for instance. And corporations are not all that keen to send it to somebody else's server that they don't know where it is or what it is at this stage. But we'll change our habits in the next 5 to 10 years. So the thought was, if that's the case, where are the tech jobs of the future? Because they're not where they are now. They're not in the programming, they're not in the IT field. So the question was asked, and it was answered, that really a lot of what's going to happen in tech, and this is 2020 onwards, is not so much in the hard skills, but more in the business skills. that the tools and technology will pretty much be taken for granted. There'll be a group of people that will develop them and they will be up online, but you won't need your hard coders as much. You won't need your software developers as much as we do now. You won't need your IT people because corporations may not have as many computers or mainframes in their office as they had before. So what you're going to need are people that understand these applications really well and can add value onto it. And the people that we're going to use then are people with some IT experience, but more business process experience than they've had before. And the shift that they're talking about in this is really asking people to think about where is your career going over the next 5 to 10 years, and maybe you need to start moving slowly, slowly towards these more business process oriented understanding and knowledge.
So that sounds like a huge, a very bright future for those people who have a hand in both industries, because in order to develop the most valuable IT software, you'd have to know how it works in real life.
Yes, exactly. So that's pretty much where we go. And it's the same thing, you know, I spent a lot of time 10, 15, 20 years ago with tech people who were all opening up, you know, offices and businesses, servicing computers in people's offices and homes. A lot of those have gone by the wayside because it's just not required as much. Mm. It's not that they were bad or good, it's just we've evolved past that point now. This is the next evolution 10 or 15 years from now.
Maurice Misiolowski, thanks for your time again this morning, Business Futurist, and your webpage is Maurice, your eye on the future, all one word, .com. That's Maurice, M-O-R-R-I-S. Thank you very much, Maurice.
Pleasure.
Great to have you on.
Have a great weekend.
All right, we'll see you soon.